with me, as always, Patrick Nazaroff.
How you doing, Elise?
And Pastor David Bowser.
Hey, how you doing, Elise?
No, you're supposed to say I'm pretty successful.
No, I'm not.
Ooh.
Wow. Throwing down. Wow.
I'm saying.
I'm just going to leave.
I'm not saying. Fired. I'm not saying that Elise is or is not successful. I'm saying that this is as good as it's going to get for me. So I'm just going to ride this train as long as I can.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith Beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here? Still pretty successful.
There we go. That's how the intro is supposed to go.
Now I get it.
Yes.
I was all thrown off by the holidays.
I know. Addled by
Advent. There's no place like Chrome for the Hollandaise.
Chrome for the Hollandaise?
There's a joke in there somewhere.
I'm not sure there is.
Yeah.
For who?
Right.
Well, because the song is There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays,
uh-huh.
But there's some elaborate joke about serving Eggs Benedict on a...
But where does thing. Chrome...
Because it's what you... the joke has to do with somebody getting a flat tire. I don't remember the
hubcaps.
Whole thing. Yeah, somehow you get like a hubcap thing, and there's no place like Chrome for the Holidays.
That feels like it's not funny.
I didn't say it was a funny joke. I just said there was a joke in there. Gosh.
By definition, a joke should be funny.
By definition of a joke, somebody's going to think the joke is not funny.
Nobody thinks using Chrome for the Holidays and explaining it poorly is dying. And nobody's out there, oh my gosh, I got to pull my car over.
I think it's pretty funny right now.
You all are
it's getting funny.
Yeah.
The worst. All of you. You're all going on Santa's naughty list.
Yes. Back from Thanksgiving. We recorded this before Thanksgiving holiday. Little behind the podcast.
Yeah.
We did two at the same time.
Our own little podcast apocalypse.
We always think is going to go easy, and it never does.
Right.
It's going to be great. We're going to do two.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
But now we're back. We're in the middle of Advent. I don't know. Does this come out?
We're at the beginning of Advent.
We're at the beginning of Advent. It feels like the middle.
End of November. Beginning of Advent.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't understand anything about this.
Yeah,
about the calendar?
About Advent.
This is coming out the Monday after Thanksgiving. That's all you really needed to understand.
We've discussed it plenty of times on the podcast. Advent. We have a whole Advent podcast from years ago.
Advent, 4 Sundays before Christmas. That's all you need to know.
And apparently 12 days after.
No,
that's Christmas.
That's Christmas.
Oh,
the Christmas season is the 12 days of Christmas.
No.
Advent are the 4 Sundays that lead up to Christmas. That's all you need to know. It's not that complicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the news?
Yeah, let's get off this train. We have a podcast about Advent. We did it several years ago.
It was a good one.
It was the pre-Elise years.
It was.
With Katie.
It was still a good one.
Yeah. Was it, though? I don't know.
Nobody has to compare Katie to Elise.
I wasn't trying to compare Katie to Elise. I was comparing us to us.
Yeah, we were still fine.
Yeah.
Just as funny as ever.
Whatever, take that however you want it to be.
I probably made my Chrome for the Hollandaise joke in that
episode.
Yes,
that's what you remember.
Our talent on that podcast was equal to our talent right now.
Yep.
Whether that is good or bad,
that's where we're at.
Who's to say? But it was certainly the same.
All right, what do we got?
All right, parents, be warned. We're talking about Elf on the Shelf.
Oh.
Ooh.
Okay.
Don't turn off your podcast. That'd be bad.
If you have children in the car.
Cover their ears.
Yeah.
Keep your hands on the street.
Avert your eyes. No, wait. That doesn't work.
But be warned.
Yeah.
Elf on the shelf. Elf on the Shelf.
Do you all do Elf on the Shelf?
No.
Yeah. Hard pass. Negative.
Leave it to him. He doesn't care.
That's fine. But no.
Yeah. No. That's no.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Georgia judge.
Wait. Which Georgia?
Yes. The state.
Okay.
Not all the right. Country.
All right. Just wanted to be clear.
Which should be illegal.
The whole country.
The official Georgia.
Right.
We have a New York, not just two Yorks. I don't even know where Old York is. So probably England somewhere.
It is in England. Yep. It's called York or Yorkshire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Carrying on.
Yeah. We have a New Hampshire. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
We have a West Virginia, not two Virginias. Georgia. One of y'all got to change. I don't care which one. I'm just saying. Well, anyway.
Georgia's on notice. Patrick.
Georgia Judd fights tyranny of Elf on the Shelf.
Whoa. Tyranny.
Okay.
Kind of.
What's he do? Or she. I shouldn't make a snubs. I'm sorry. Okay.
Judge Robert Leonard posted an order on Twitter earlier this month banishing these elves. Tired of living in Elf on the Shelf tyranny? Not looking forward to the elf forgetting to move and causing your kids emotional distress? I'm a public servant and I will take the heat for you. My gift to tired parents, Leonard tweeted, along with a court order banning Elf on the Shelf.
Wow.
Pretty sure court orders can't do that.
It's a joke.
I will say that that's the energy that I want from my elected officials.
Yeah.
Finally.
Seems like a better use of their time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with mm-hmm. Elf on a Shelf, it's a little elf that you buy, and then you place him in your house doing mischievous things
comes
before
to life
Christmas.
Every night.
Yeah, theoretically.
The elf comes to life and does mischievous things, yes, as elves are wont to do. Yeah. Because the elf is also there to spy on your children.
Yeah. And then after Christmas,
and report
he's like,
Santa. Like,
I guess like he could be your Advent elf. Bring him out
that's
for
right.
Advent.
I mean, I think that's when they bring them out. They bring them out in these weeks leading up to Christmas. You don't bring out Elf on a Shelf after Christmas.
If you need your kids spied on, they need spying on in July.
Right.
No just as much as they need it in December.
No argument there. I'm just saying that's what the elf does. The elf is there watching you. Yeah.
That's pretty creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so Santa.
Yeah.
And so's God.
But from a distance.
From a distance. So
they're not in my house at night, like messing with my stuff and watching me turn.
But
they're
in like a van outside with binoculars.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's where Santa is. And that's cool. Or he's not like tapped into my Alexa. Right, what are they talking about in there?
Yeah, Santa's got a wiretap.
Yeah. So, what do we think? Elf on the Shelf, banned.
Fine by me. It's banned in my house, so I'm in support of this. Yeah.
I wasn't doing it anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, inexplicably, elves sometimes move and don't move overnight. And when those elves do not move, it leaves our children of tender years in states of extreme emotional distress.
I've heard tales of such a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, of, Elfie didn't move, or whatever the elf's name is. Sparky or Snowflake or... You get to name your elf. When you
name it? It doesn't come with a name? It's not like a Beanie Baby?
I think you name it yourself.
Okay.
No.
Seems like we should give the elf some agency in this process. I don't feel like we should just deem the name. I mean, the elf is a living creature that gets up and does things.
Your children, you also named.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't want them to have agency in their life. It's fine.
Yeah, I made that.
any animal that comes in your home, it does not tell you its name. You just name it.
Patrick, listen. When an animal comes into my home, I listen very closely.
And kick it out.
And it whispers its soul name.
And call the talent.
Oh my gosh. David hates animals if you're a new listener.
I don't hate animals. I hate animals that are not mine. That's not true. I don't hate animals that are
so
not mine.
You hate my animals?
You don't even like your animals.
I do. I like Rhapsody. We have an agreed upon love-hate relationship.
Did he agree to
that? When you say I have a love-hate relationship, that and you say I like them though, those are not the same things.
I clean his litter box, I make sure he's fed, and he doesn't kill me in my sleep. That's all I need. What I don't like is people who let their cats like wander all over our neighborhood, and then they hang out outside of our windows and mess with my cat, and I don't like that. Uh-huh. Keep your cat in your house, people.
I would love to have neighborhood cats. They came to visit me.
Come on over. We got a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And you can take them away, far, far, far away.
Sure. We have wild hogs in our neighborhood.
Ooh.
And the HOA is like all up in arms about it because they like mess with people's landscaping and stuff.
Yeah, and they like could like trample your children.
Sure. I hadn't really considered that.
Yeah.
Mostly they've been going on about their flower beds.
About the flower, right. Sure.
But
sure.
I find it fascinating. I mean, I love them.
Wild hogs could like mess you up.
Yeah. I guess that's something to consider for me, but I was excited about it until we started talking about it. Sure. So,
watch out.
What else do you have in the news?
He recalled, the judge here, a horrific incident in his own home when three children were sent to school in tears, with one child being labeled an elf murderer.
Yikes.
And accused of making the elf lose his magic because it didn't move overnight.
Elf murderer.
So the kids like ganged up against one of them. I love that.
Yeah.
Like, you were the one.
I think they went to school and they're like, this happened. And then their classmates were like, you're an elf murderer.
Oh, it wasn't like the siblings?
I think so.
I was hoping it was like the older two siblings,
right?
Like,
against the youngest
ganging
one.
Up against the youngest. Be like,
I'm gonna say if that's happening at home, and that's probably happening if you have older siblings. Elf is not the problem.
Yeah.
Elf ain't solving nothing. Get him out of there. Keep him in there. It doesn't matter. that's gonna happen.
I could see it though, right? I mean, like one kid has a bad night, whatever. Something happens during dinner. And everybody goes to bed and everybody's fine, but they wake up and they all forgot to move because mom and dad were tired. And
one of
they
them
wake
peed
up.
The bed.
This
so
is
it's
because
be...
this is because of what you did. You know what you did. Like I could see the older brother or sibling having some energy.
100%. I'm just saying, like, that's going to happen even
regardless,
if the elf is not in the home.
Yeah,
they will taunt and torment one another.
Right, but this is like specifically calling them an elf murderer,
sure,
which seems extreme in a particular.
That's pretty awesome, though.
Yeah. Wow, wear it as a badge of honor, kids. Right. You know, you're an elf murderer. You're like, that's right.
Be
What's
proud.
That Van Helsing?
I'm coming to your
elf
house.
Murderer.
Next.
Right.
He's a vampire.
I almost said Van Morrison. It's like, no, that's
Van
not Morris, right.
Yeah, that's a guitarist, isn't it?
Van Morrison, elf murderer.
Yes. So now it's not elf on a shelf. It's elf in a cell. Because it's illegal.
Sure. Okay. Elf in a cell. I like it.
I think let's send our elves to the prison system. They're going to have a great time with them. I'd love to see what scenes and reenactments our prison system can come up with these elves.
Yeah, moving on. All right. What else we got?
Elf with a shiv. Elf making toilet wine.
All right. We get it. Moving on. Moving on. Nope.
Can I do one more show before we get in trouble? Probably not.
We might be already
I've got
past
one
that.
I'm not going to say.
Yeah, okay. I got a lot I'm not going to say. Elf tunneling through the walls. And right. The guards show up like, what's happening? And they're like, ah, it's just mischievous Christmas fun.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Elf tunneling through the wall. That's funny. That's fine. Yeah. All right. We'll give you that.
This is what Snowflake is doing. He did say, if you love your
write
elf.
Write your others down for later.
If you love your elf, keep your elf. No contempts of court.
Aw, so that's nice.
Yeah. But if you don't love your elf, you could say, hey, Judge Rob Leonard.
Can I hold you in contempt of my house? Can I do that?
Well, you don't have to invite Judge Rob Leonard into your home.
No, I'm on his side.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can point to this to your kids. But like, I'd love to have an elf, but it's against the law.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I really do appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we're getting to our main story this evening.
All right.
Back in Relevant, 2 weeks in a row.
Boom.
Talking about the ladies.
Is that a song or did you just make that up?
I don't know. Yeah,
probably, I like it.
There's a better song for
it's
this
got a
intro.
Definite, it's got a definite
all
jam
the single
to it.
Ladies,
there you go.
All the single ladies.
We're all dancing really bad.
I'm waving my hand. Does that count? That's a thing I've
you
seen
you weren't
do.
Waving your hand when you were doing that anyway.
I said that when I said the words, I was waving my hand.
You're not waving it. You have to flash your ring finger back and forth.
Yeah.
I'm flashing my ring finger.
Yeah. If you like it, then you should put a ring on it.
That's the church should have done that because the headline is a large number of single women are leaving the church. Why?
Because we didn't put a ring on it.
Yes, if we liked it, then we should have put a ring on it. Yes.
Elise, you're the closest thing to a single lady we have on this podcast.
None of us are single, and 2/3 of us aren't ladies. So Elise, you got half thing. You got half the thing right. You know, like. So, look, if one of us were single, you could be like, hey, you know, like, it's a toss-up. Which one's closer? Like,
to a lady.
To a single lady. Woman. To a single woman. Yeah.
Single or lady. Yeah. You can't have both.
All right, so there is a legitimate question here. Is a single man's experience closer to a single woman's experience, or is a married woman's experience closer to a single woman's experience?
I would say married woman's experience, because I have been a single lady.
That's what I think.
At one point.
There was a legitimate question there.
Yeah. I would say that the lady probably holds more weight than the single.
Sure.
If we want to really dissect this.
Okay.
Fair enough.
All right. So at least you're the expert on this episode.
If I was, you know, I guess I'm a straight, heterosexual male. Uh-huh. So if I was single, I wouldn't be like, I'm just looking for a single. I'm looking for a lady. You know, single is obviously attached, you know, but like.
Yeah. Like, fair enough.
Any right. single anywhere, you know, like,
this
hey.
Is good life advice right now.
All right. This is what happens when we record back to back.
All right. I kind of like it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a fun vibe.
Sometimes it's a little loose. Sometimes it's a little draggy. So. Here we go. All right. So author Katie Gaudini.
I'm really glad this was not written by a dude. That would have been problematic right off the get-go.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to presume
that's true.
The gender of Katie Gaudini.
I think she does say I at some point, referring to her experience as a female researcher.
She does.
So, opening, she talks about going to a world conference in London. She went to a panel called Faith and Feminism, and women from different faith backgrounds talk about their experiences within those faith backgrounds. And halfway through, a 30-ish-year-old woman stood up to raise her hand, I guess.
Stood up to raise her hand?
Well,
it's very dynamic.
Respect. Yes.
Wow. Get it, girl. Yes, queen.
Wow.
All the single ladies.
Could have been a big room. All right. So stood up, raised her hand, wanted to speak.
Wants to speak.
Asked for permission to address the
question.
Assembly.
I got a question, yes. Yeah. I'm so tired of fighting Christian church leaders to be treated equally, but I don't want to leave the church. Mm. So what do I do?
Come to the Lutheran church. We'll help you.
Pause, reformulate her question. How do I stay? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else's heart just break a little bit?
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Yeah. That's pretty tough. And we've talked about kind of egalitarianism in the church. Mm-hmm. We talked about females in ministry mm-hmm. on the podcast. I think this is taking a little bit of stab of it because we're not just saying like women are leaving church. It's kind of really single women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is something a little different. Historically speaking, women are pretty key to the church. Mm-hmm. Even from a very patriarchal structure, probably the majority of the people in the congregation are women on a Sunday mm-hmm. morning.
Yeah. Even go back and look at the New Testament and the first churches that were being set up. We have ample evidence that women played vital roles in those communities, either being the ones who were hosting them in their homes because they were the ones who ran the home. If they were married, they were the ones who ran the home, or perhaps they even had their own business in some of these instances. Yeah. And even being lifted up as leaders within the church as opposed to just hostesses. This is an ancient practice.
Ooh. Yes. So, according to a study, mm-hmm. It turns out that single Christian women are leaving the churches at an increasingly high rate, and in the UK and the United States, they're the demographic that's most likely to leave the church mm-hmm. is single Christian women. So, that's pretty alarming. So, we have to say, but why?
I got some theories, but I want to hear from Elise first. Yeah. So I'm going to sit on my hands because if I sit on my hands, I can't talk.
Right. It's like
my
Is that how that works? That's my mute button. We'll there see we how long this works for. I mean, so I think that it is, as always, it's a combination of factors, right? There's no like one thing that I, not the expert, just the lady, not single currently or in the future, hopefully, but... to clarify.
Let's dissect that.
Yeah. There are things that I can point to and say, like, I think each one of these plays a role. I don't think that there's any, like, one easy answer. I think, first and foremost, that the church has sort of perpetrated this culture of singleness as a failing, especially mm-hmm. for a woman. We give men space to be single for longer than we do women.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, and this is now coming from my perspective, so you can please tell me if I'm off base here, but I think that it comes from historically male-centric leadership. Mm-hmm. And so we are preaching to our experiences, right? And so if I'm a male pastor, I have experiences as a single male, and I have experiences as a husband in a family. Mm-hmm. And so I can kind of address being in a family and being in a married relationship. Mm-hmm. I can address being a single man. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to being a single woman. And so I'm never going to preach about those instances. Right. I'm never going to share stories about being a single woman. I'm never going to share those experiences to try and like draw that crowd in because I have no ability to speak to that, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that because we've had generations of male-centric leadership, we've got this huge gap where, and the author will address this a little bit, where we preach to teens and what to do like as a teenager when you're single. And I think that we even do a pretty decent job of preaching and giving a message for single men, right? I mean, single men is a demographic that's definitely missing from the church, but when they're there, by and large, we have a lot of opportunities for them to connect.
Yeah.
We don't have that same place for single women, but we have that once you're married because we celebrate marriage, which should be celebrated, right? We're all married. I think that's a good thing. We should celebrate.
I like being married.
Yeah. Right. But we should not celebrate marriage over and above saying like, oh, this is superior to living a life of singleness. Like there's nothing inferior about being single.
Right. I do think a piece of that is the male-centric leadership and just mm-hmm. the way that we preach. I think another piece of that is just the cultural funneling of women into your path is that you should desire to be married, know, or that you should mm-hmm. desire this. And that if you reach a certain point without that, it's because of a failing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of definitely has, language attributed to women of like, go like catch yourself a man in a sense. Like the women want to be married, the men don't. Mm-hmm. So ladies get out there and lure a man in.
Yeah.
And
like a trout.
Yeah. And get him caught in your talons.
Mm-hmm. Go noodling. Yes. That's for catfish. Yeah.
That is a way you fish.
I don't understand. Yeah.
For explaining it. Yeah. I mean, I think if you think about it too, you think about like a man who has never quote unquote settled down, who's never been married, right? That's had other things like career pursuits or whatever. Yeah. You say, wow, man of the world. Look how accomplished he is. He's his own person.
Yeah. He's 45 and has never been married.
He's George Clooney. That's he's not weird at all. Awesome.
Yeah. Right. A woman like that, you think, oh, I wonder what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spinster.
Yeah.
Why? She must be horrible. So you would think like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like something is wrong.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. Obviously, the key thing, and we talk about single women, is the word single.
Yeah.
So that has to be a big factor, is the singleness. And one of those things is oftentimes, if you're single, you're going to church, you're thinking, hey, this would be kind of an ideal place to like meet somebody.
Sure.
We have a shared dynamic of like a worldview here in this place. Mm-hmm. We got some easy ins to like form a conversation or a relationship that's safe and understandable, hopefully.
Right.
and that's what I'd like. But then you go to church with a lot of singles, and women are outnumbering men
a lot.
2-3-4-1
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you're in competition with your Christian sisters and not like this is a fun, happy, exciting thing.
Well, we've all been socialized to be in competition with each other anyway, so that's nothing new.
They're used to it.
Yeah. So
I'm saying it's like a scarcity economics for women.
Wow. Yeah. There are more women than men in the world, so there's that.
There are, yeah.
But also
it's really it isn't a competition, but it's been made to be one.
Yeah. Well, if the end goal is to prove your worth by being married, then of course it's a competition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that it's just.
Sure.
I think it's, we've set up the wrong goal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we change the goal, then I think the rest of it becomes less of a competition.
Right.
Well, I mean, again, if you're teaching on Sunday morning and your classes are centered around the traditional family unit or partnership in marriage, and that's where you have a lot of points and things you're teaching on those things, what do single people do with that except for like, oh, I hope it's me one day, I'll sit here with my spouse and it'll be then we'll get all this fun teaching.
It's such a disservice to single people too, because it's just focusing all of your energy on something that may or may not ever happen versus focusing your energy on what you actually have right now, which could be wonderful,
And if we're kind of saying theologically and things like, the greatest love that exists is between you and your partner.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're like, well, that sucks for me. Looks like I am not tapping into that great love.
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to do that? I think another thing about this singleness, and that we can say here, and I'm going to be pretty direct. When you're single at church for a woman, men can be weird.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%.
And men can be weird outside of church.
Sure.
But this is
we bring a special brand of weirdness.
I know church men. I don't. I, men at bars. I don't know what they're doing. I don't get it. I know guys in church because I am a guy in church.
Yeah.
At least I asked you before.
Are you weird in church? Do we need to have a conversation?
Probably.
Okay. Good.
I'm not single, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can be weird. I'm
somebody
married.
Caught me up. I asked you before when we were eating lunch in between our podcast here. Did you, when you were going to Bible college, did you or your female friends experience men coming up to you, like classmates saying like, God laid it on my heart that we should be married or go on a date or things like that?
Yes. Tons is the answer. I mean, I think most.
What a pickup line.
I know, right? Yeah. How do you argue with God?
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
Right. Now I do.
Right.
But I mean, most of the time, I think they wouldn't start like right out of the gate with that we should be married.
That's good.
That's good.
You know,
they'd ease into it. Yeah.
Start off with like, God told me to talk to you.
Yeah. Did you ever come back with, God told me to walk away?
Generally, just like would not give out my information.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
Yeah.
I've prayed about it right now while I'm talking to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's a tip for the single men. If you want to talk to somebody, just talk to them and own that you want to talk to them.
But I don't want to admit that I want to talk to you.
Right.
I want to give God the power, because you can't refuse God.
Yeah.
You could refuse me.
It's not very attractive.
Well, that's what you think.
It is what I think.
Yeah, that is weird. I mean, like, look. If
for sure.
If someone's coming after you and be like, God laid this on my heart that we're supposed to go on a date or have a romantic relationship.
He hasn't said that to me yet, Sue.
That's weird. I mean, that is an odd way of communicating and going about those things. I would feel kind of weirded out. And I'm a dude. So
I feel weirded out just by this conversation, and no one's actually even said it to me. So, I can only imagine what happens when you actually get like that said to you.
Yeah.
It just feels weird.
I mean, there were worse things that happened in Bible college, so that was fairly mild.
Still,
Sure. And then when you flip those things around, like, what are, you know, in many Christian circles, what happens with women who are supposed to, you know, what if they want to pursue a relationship mm-hmm. with a guy? In the article here, it tells a story of a woman who worked for a church. She once asked a guy out for coffee, and then he showed up with three of his friends.
I mean, it's better odds that way.
That's true. Hey, yeah. So, hey,
eliminate out of lemons.
Yeah, this is, we got the dating game.
That's right. Let's play our game. Step right up.
Yeah, and
did he show up with three of his friends because he thought it was like just a friend thing, or did he show up with three of his friends because he's like, this is not safe for me to be on a date with this individual on my own? Like, what was his purpose?
We have no idea.
We don't know. Okay.
Yeah. Say that.
I mean, it's weird no matter what.
Yeah. But, yeah, I would guess it was probably like awkwardness that she asked him, yeah, and he wanted to make a point about that.
Yeah,
would be my guess.
Power move.
Yeah,
what a jerk.
Is it? Yeah.
Okay, so the first asterisk here that the article talks about is that singleness.
Yeah.
So singleness makes it hard to be in church. And yeah. I think we've kind of addressed that. Any other thoughts on that idea?
Yeah, I just think it's not a demographic that the church as a whole knows how to address or speak to, because we've lifted up marriage and family life as the epitome of faithfulness for so long that we've not given space for people to be faithful and dedicated in singleness, right? Whether that's singleness that desires a relationship or singleness that desires singleness, we've not given space for that.
Yeah. For sure.
We don't know what to do with people who don't fit into our understanding of you are supposed to want to be married and have babies, and that's supposed to be what every human wants to do.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to do that, why don't you want to? That's what humans do.
Right.
And we don't know what to do with people who don't fit into that category.
And I can tell you, so many churches out there, the vast majority of them are thinking, how do we attract young families?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they all want. We all want young families. We got to get those young families here to our church. What can we do? What are the events? What are the things?
Yeah.
Not a lot of churches out there are thinking like, how can we attract 30-year-old women who are single?
Yeah.
Like, how can we get them in the door? Like, they're just not a demographic that is at the forefront of the minds of churches. Like,
sure.
It's just not there. And so there you go. So it's not, they're not being pursued. When they're in the church, they're being pursued weirdly sometimes by men, and they're not being validated by their own single experience.
Yep.
So the singleness is a factor.
Yep.
All right. So the next thing is they're going to say is it's intimidating to be a single woman in a church.
Probably. Mm.
All right.
I've never been a single woman in the church, but I could see it.
Elise, closest to a single woman in the church.
Lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you connect with this idea that it's intimidating?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's intimidating to be female in the church to begin with, because it has historically been so male-centric and so male-dominated. And I think we here at Lord of Life do a pretty good job of trying to mitigate some of that. But, you know, if you think about it, women's rights has changed pretty rapidly in the course of history, right? It's really just the last, 100 years or so that we've made huge strides in this.
In the United States anyway, yeah.
Right, that we don't have to be connected to a partner or a parent to do things. You know, this is all kind of new territory. So I think that we're experiencing a lot of growing pains there.
Mm.
I wonder a lot where a lot of this messaging comes from. You know, we're talking about young families and, you know, that being the cornerstone of the church and stuff. Where is that coming from? Is that ancient text that we're sort of pulling from? Or is it the 1950s family propaganda?
Yeah.
So
it's absolute. I mean, we're not pulling that from scripture. Nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus says, let the little children come to me. Jesus doesn't say, let the young families come. Like,
right.
that's not Jesus's point.
Right.
And you know, children were thought of much differently in Jesus's time as well, right? I mean, children were, until they were old enough to work, they were just another mouth that you had to try to provide for. They were really a burden.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea of Jesus inviting them to him was a very different kind of lifting up of people that were not thought of otherwise.
Yeah.
So, we're not pulling that from scripture. We're pulling that from this idealized understanding of what the family is supposed to be, whether that's 1950s, 40s, 20s, whatever that might be. But it's this idyllic historical, that's the family we want.
Yeah. And I think that's where the you should want to be married and make babies comes from too as well. But I mean, you know, people in power are always going to want to maintain that power, right? And stuff has been very good for men for a very long time. So part of why it is intimidating for women in the church to have a voice and speak up is because whenever we do, there's always a man in the wings that is saying, wow, she needs to tone that down, or she's being difficult, or she's just, you know, trying to shake things up, because it's perceived as a threat. Whereas if another man was saying the same thing, it's a boys' club.
Yeah, and I think that's heightened coming from a single woman than coming from a married woman,
probably.
which is inappropriate. But I think
you're connected to a man.
whether it's because you're connected to a man, or whether it's because as a married woman you speak in a particular way or speak to a certain experience that someone else can relate to. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever it might be, I think that within the church we're more willing to listen to a woman that has been married mm-hmm. than we are willing to listen to a woman who is single, or a woman who's
canon.
Yeah, like a woman who's widowed, like sometimes has mm-hmm. like a wise whatever persona about them, because you know they're typically older when sure. they're, and so I think we still listen to them even in their singleness, but a young single woman I don't think we really honor or give space to or give
mm-hmm.
you know, because I think we look back and say, oh, something's wrong.
Yep.
That's so sad that she's still single, where somebody might be really happy and single.
Yeah
like they, could
I know
be
people
they,
I know women who are happy and single.
Yeah.
They're not in the church though.
Yeah Would they be if they were married?
Depends on who they're married to as well.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Probably.
Like, are they people who are like, are they people who are like, yeah, I'm religious, I just feel really uncomfortable in the church as a single person? Or are they people who are like, I wouldn't be in the church regardless?
The people I'm thinking of off the top of my head would not be in the church regardless. Yeah, okay. I don't know if they would be happy and single if they were religious, though, because I think there's so much weight put on relationships.
Yeah.
So in this section mm-hmm. of intimidation, I think one, we kind of talked about this, like this idea of like, when you're a woman and you're married, it kind of just validates you a little bit more as a person mm-hmm. in the eyes of the church, like what your opinion is, how you speak, who you are as a human being, that marriage is kind of like the gateway into the church's inner sanctum mm-hmm. in a sense.
And you followed, there's a perception that you followed the path that you're supposed to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when we say this word intimidating, according to the author here, Miss Katie, forgot her last name, she is saying like oftentimes women are hearing this, that they are intimidating when they're single.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's hard for the church to connect with them.
Mm.
In fact, for this article, she interviewed many, many young single women in the church, what's causing them stress, anxiety, things like this. And the word intimidating came up often in interviews, even at the most unintimidating of women, according even the most soft-spoken, gentle, easygoing, classically submissive woman, by being single, she would intimidate the church.
Mm-hmm.
They just do not know how to approach or understand or connect. And that women are being told they just need to tone it down.
Yeah.
And what is it? Well, who you are.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to be less you.
You just need to get married.
Yeah.
Is what that is.
Yeah. You just need to be a little less you. Hook yourself a man.
Be more like Jesus.
Yeah. And then finally, you have, like, weight and validity within the church structure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had a point in my life where I received the message, hey, you need to do this thing before you have validity in the church.
Yeah.
And so I can only imagine what that would feel like. But even just speaking that's into someone's existence feels awful. It just feels terrible to think that someone has to jump through a hoop before they feel valid in the eyes of the church. A hoop they may or may not actually want to jump through, right? And that's, I think we should think really hard about that piece of our experience as the church, which is not to say that it's anybody's fault, right? We're not saying like, oh, you know, married couples, or oh, you male pastors, right? It's not that it's someone's fault. It's that this is what's happened. And so now we need to address it. It's not about us hearing blame and feeling like we're, you know, getting scapegoated or whatever. Like, no, just fix it. Just address it and mm-hmm. say, this is the reality. And let's do it different. Let's be different than it was before. Let's be intentional about it and look for something better, because that's what we're called to, is something better than this.
Yeah. I mean, I think we also just police women
mm-hmm.
more than we do men. I'm thinking specifically of the way that women dress.
Sure. Absolutely.
In the church. Like, there's all kinds of judgments and assumptions mm-hmm. that are made about women based on the way that they dress that are not made about men.
Sure.
So that, I think that plays into finding single women intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Now, granted, if I showed up in a spaghetti strap dress, there would be plenty of judgments made about me, too.
You already wear a dress to church, so.
We've discussed this. It's a wrap, and I don't want to hear about it. Anyway, absolutely. We police women on their appearance far more than we.
Well, let's get into the last topic that she has here, the last bullet point here. And parents, if you have kids listening to the car again, I think maybe the time to screen this section.
Your voice got really high during that part.
Because the last biggest factor of propelling women out of the church is sex.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One of the things we've seen over the last couple of years with the movements of like hashtag Me Too, hashtag Church Too, is we've seen so many things of how like the message of sexual purity can be incredibly damaging to people, especially to women, since they not only have to hold their own, you know, sexual purity in line, oftentimes they're expected to hold those of their male peers in line as well. That they have to control everybody's libido in the room. Like it's up to them to keep it all on the level. And that is complicated. And how do we walk from that into your late 20s, your 30s, your 40s, understanding your own sexuality when all you heard was kind of like as a teenager? Or you hear about the beauty and intimacy of marriage. One of those two things. Either you're a teen who's supposed to avoid sex, or you're married and you're supposed to celebrate sex. What do I do if I'm 30 and I'm single? That makes it really complex.
The church doesn't have a great message for that.
So if that's how kind of the church, what the church offers kind of single women, what can we do better? How do we approach this differently?
I've got some feelings about it.
What do you got?
For one thing, this is all very personal to me. I'm like pro abolish purity culture. I think it has not done us any good.
I think that's fair.
And way more harm than any potential good there. So I think that's a good starting point.
I like that because I think it's long game, right? It's not like it might not fix it for the people who are 30 and single now, but it can help address people who are 15 and will someday be 30 and single.
So strides in the right direction.
So, I mean, talking about sex relationships in a more healthy way from an earlier age, I think would make a huge stride.
That's a more realistic way.
Well, I think one of the things that is clear, if the church's message to our young people is like, wait till marriage, hey, that is a pretty fine message when everybody's getting married at 20. You know, like, I'm not saying like it's, it, you know, whether that's good or bad in and of itself, but if like the holdout is like four more years and you got it. But if you're in America and around the world, people are getting married later and later. What's the message, you know, when you're 16 and you're like, hey, you'll probably not get married for another double your life. What is our answer?
I mean, and the reality is the world doesn't look the same that it did, you know, however long ago, you know, when Jesus's time, when people were getting married at 15 or younger, or, you know.
And I'm not saying that that necessarily means, like, for me, that, like, the church's message is, like, wrong. I just think, like, it is not right to end the discussion on sexual ethics at 18 and then pick it up when married. Like that have that gray area in the middle where there's no discussion at all. There's no idea that like single women have like sex drives and like they have a desire for these things, and kind of address it like, oh, your sexuality is a faucet and you just keep that thing off. And then when you're married, you turn it on. Like
that sounds healthy.
Yeah, that's just not how it works. And so if that is kind of the discussion to young people is like, keep that off, don't even look at it. That has to be different when we're dealing with people who get married later and later and later. Like, it just cannot look exactly the same. Like, that's just not fair. And not to say, again, the churches should not have a sexual ethic they're discussing, but it meant something different 50 years ago than it does today. And that cannot be sustainable.
I've said this before, I think, but I think we can do way better in terms of sexual ethics than just saying wait till you're married. That seems like an arbitrarily low bar to me.
So any other ideas on how sex and sexuality is kind of a barrier for single women here in the church?
I mean, I think I would guess, I'm going to make a huge assumption here, but I would guess that there's a perceived or perhaps a legitimate feeling of danger in some cases where, you know, perhaps they're feeling, I don't know what the verb form of a predator would be, predated on. No, it's not it. Is there a word there? Am I making this up?
I think it is, but I can't remember it.
Anyway, I could easily see where they would feel like that's a risk. Yeah, a risk that they would maybe not be, understandably, not be willing to put themselves into. Like, I mean, if I'm going to, let's say Lord of Life starts a singles group, right? And I'm going to a singles group and there's only creepy guys there, or you know, whatever that, or like the older married couple is there, and the husband in this married couple just feels awkward or whatever, because they're supposed to be like the guides to like lead us on this journey or whatever. But like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that just feels predatory and could feel really icky.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be legitimately icky, I should say. Like, this is not just like a perception of like, oh, they just misunderstood. Like, no, this could be legitimately wrong.
Yeah. And I think especially, you know, as we're approaching these things, as teens get transitioned from child to adult, you know, the messaging doesn't change, or the messaging is there present in that time period of like, your value as a woman to your future spouse is partly based on your virginity and that purity and things like that. And boys don't have that quite the same, you know, like that same idea that one day when you get married, it matters that you're sexually pure to your future spouse. It just does not click or connect or preached about the same way. And so that's a pretty intimidating for you to be 28 years old, be like, I'm not married. I don't know if it'll ever happen. What do I do in this situation? And there's the church is not has basically nothing to offer you at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the problem, is like, we just have nothing. Like, like we're just like,
I mean,
keep on, keep it on. Like, call us when you get engaged. Like,
I guess what I've seen, like my single friends that are in the church, is that there's just a completely different attitude towards their sexuality than there is towards like single men's sexuality. Right. So you have a man and a woman, and they're both single and they both are sexually active. The attitude towards the man is going to be, well, that's maybe not ideal, but you know, it's kind of what you expect of them.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, whatever. Towards her, it's like, wow,
that's inappropriate.
Whore of Babylon, you know? So there's a lot of like, it's not just that we have nothing to offer. It's that there's a lot of like active negative connotations to that.
Yeah.
So I think this does, you know, bring up some real questions that I think the church, not just Lord of Life, the global church has to start looking at here, is if women are typically in churches more than men, which is a fact, and people are getting married later and later, so the ideally they're going to be single longer. The no longer are you graduating college with your MRS degree, you know, like you're sticking it out, you're sticking it out longer single. And if single women are leaving the church, where does that leave the church? You know, like that's kind of like, like, are we just saying like, hey, good to see you guys through youth group. Check us out in your 30s when you're married. Yeah. We'll still be here doing our thing.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think there's two sides to this. I mean, I think one, we should absolutely be addressing these issues and be trying to cultivate a space for single women, for people of all genders and all relationship statuses, right? We should be cultivating a place in which people can enter into a relationship with God. That's what it should be about. But at the same time, the church is not going to fall apart just because single women are leaving.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the church of God is going to continue to stand, whether single women leave, married men leave, kids leave, whatever. The church of God is going to have the final word. Like, that's going to happen one way or the other. But we should also be actively working to make a place where people can experience that.
Yeah. I'm not here to raise, the white flags or the storm flags here. It's just more of like the church as is may not stand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a very real thing. Like the
church as is maybe shouldn't stand, right?
Like, if it's broke, shouldn't we fix it?
Nah, I like that squeaky door.
Yeah. Well, and not just as is, you know, the bad things, but also the good things might not stand, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because maybe the good things are propping up the bad things.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Profound.
Right.
I'm just saying, I've got a door on my daughter's bedroom that sticks that I could fix, but I don't fix.
Because she can't get out of it in the morning?
What?
Because it sticks?
No, she pulls on it and we can hear it, so she doesn't get out without us hearing it.
I mean, that would be way cooler if she was just like stuck in there until you let her out.
We don't lock our daughter in there. But like,
take a three steps, put your shoulder into it.
Right. No judgment. I would love that.
Just sticks enough that we can, but you know, I don't fix it because I don't really want to find out what else is wrong. That's like, when I take this out and fix this problem, what else am I going to discover that's actually wrong right now that I now have fixed? Right. Yeah.
It's the wall.
Or, you know, this literally happened with my irrigation system the other day. I had one place where a pipe was busted. So I go down and I fix that part of the pipe and I find another place where the pipe is busted. So I fix that. And then I find another place. And it was like, if I had known this, I would have just left the pipe busted. Like, I would have just left it alone. And I think there's a piece of this, right? We don't want to fix, mm-hmm. we don't want to fix the good or fix the bad stuff because there might be good stuff that we don't want to have to get rid of, that we don't know is broken until right. we start to, yeah.
Because it does balloon, right? It's, you say, oh, single women are leaving the church. What can we do to keep them? But it's yeah. not just that, right? There's other underlying problems and there's right. reasons.
Yeah. yeah. It's not just, oh, we didn't have a Bible study for single women. Let's yeah. have a single women's Bible study and that'll make it. That's not the problem.
No.
I mean, that might be an issue, right? Right. Maybe having, but if you're not creating a cultural change that is shifting away from the ways that you have done and thought about relationships and singleness and marriage and faith and family, if you're not moving away from that into something new that gives a space for people to be fully themselves, then it doesn't matter how many single Bible studies you have. The same result is going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Fun.
Happy Advent, everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, if you liked this episode...
Put a ring on it.
You've been sitting on that from the beginning, haven't
I'm
you?
Waiting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, so if you liked this episode, put a ring on it, as Patrick says. But be sure to like, rate, review. You sing it in the background as I do this. Like, rate, review us on your favorite podcast listening service. Be sure to share this out with your single friends. I'm sure they'll love it. Maybe they have some ideas for what we should do differently. And we'd love to hear from them, too. And you can write us at beyondsightedpodcast@gmail.com.
Say, God laid this on my heart.
Yeah. God laid it on my heart to share this podcast with you.
You need to listen to this podcast. And be my wife. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.